Homeschool.com, America's leading source for homeschooling information, recorded this live interview as part of our free homeschooling teleconference series. If you would like to receive the schedule for upcoming teleconferences, please send an email to advisor@homeschool.com. Our next interview this morning is with Donna Lynn Yates of Memory Joggers. For the next hour, we're going to be talking about Memory Joggers for math. That is Donna Lynn's expertise. So, Donna Lynn, are you on the call?
Yes, I am.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Donna Lynn is a highly sought-after public speaker and author on the subject of memory in the field of elementary education. She has combined successful methods of memorization with individual learning styles and developed a wide range of products that help all children succeed, even those with learning challenges. Donna Lynn has always been interested in the subject of mnemonics and began researching how the brain retains information. Using this research, she developed the Memory Joggers Multiplication and Division Learning System. I'm so glad that you're here today, Donna Lynn. On homeschool.com, when we looked at our stat server for our resource guide, we discovered that curriculum was the most popular category, and surprisingly, math was number two.
Well, I can understand.
I didn't expect math to be the second most popular category, so obviously this is a big issue for homeschooling.
It is, yes.
And I know I used to be an algebra and geometry teacher. I really love math. I always want my children to enjoy it. And the multiplication table, boy, it just takes a lot of time.
It does. It really does.
Now, I noticed from your bio that you have done a lot of research on how the brain remembers information.
You know, I have. Learning how the brain processes information and why we can remember some things easily and then forget other things, it's been quite fascinating to me. So today, what I wanted to do was talk a little bit about the way the brain processes information. So I'm going to make it pretty simple. I'm going to talk about short-term and long-term memory. And what short-term memory is, it's called working memory. So say you're learning something new and you remember and understand the information, but then later as you try to recall the details, you just can't remember it. In fact, think about it this way. Say your child is working with little cubes to illustrate an addition problem. There's maybe 6 cubes and he adds another 8 and he counts them and gets 14. At that moment, your child can easily remember that, you know, 6 plus 8 is 14. And then if you're using the fact family method of teaching subtraction at the same time, you can say, what's 14 minus 6? And he will figure out the answer of 8. So yes, he knows the answers during that time. That's short-term memory. But perhaps a few days later, if you ask him, what's 6 plus 8? I don't know. So it can be a problem.
Why didn't that fact go into the long-term memory?
Well, you know, there's a number of reasons. First of all, if that was the only fact to remember, it'd be easy. But, you know, we expect a child to memorize approximately 150 different combinations of numbers for addition and subtraction. And there definitely needs to be some strategies to memorize. Plus, we have to also remember that each child has his or her own unique learning style.
I love learning styles and really applying them to each child. I didn't realize that they affect how a child memorizes information.
They very definitely do. Today, what I'm going to do is narrow it down to the three main types of learning styles. You know, there's a lot of, you can get quite involved there, but I'm going to talk about our visual learners, our auditory learners, and our kinesthetic learners. And, of course, the visual learners, they need a picture in order to memorize information. They need to see it. And then the auditory learners, they need to hear themselves repeat the information aloud and then, of course, tell it to someone else. And our kinesthetic learners, they must become a part of the activity by using their body in some way. So as I was developing my memorization systems, I really kept these learning styles in mind And my memory jogger systems definitely work with all these learning styles.
Well, can you tell us about the strategies used to place information into long-term memory so that it can be easily recalled?
I sure can. There's a list of about 7 or 8 different components necessary to move information from short-term into long-term memory. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about each one today and give you some examples of how it works. The first one is meaningfulness. And, you know, this goes without saying. It has to make sense or you can't memorize it. But it's also, remember, if we try to teach a child that 2 + 2 = 4, until we teach the child the concrete ways of what adding means in relation to numbers, you know, it won't make sense. So we have to have meaningfulness. And this is what we do. You know, this is the method of teaching we use. We give it everything meaning. So then we ask ourselves, well, why isn't it working? Well, that's just one part of the puzzle. You know, just because you understand something doesn't mean you're going to remember it necessarily. So that brings us to the second component, which is familiarity. And again, the more you know about a subject, the easier it is to learn new information about it. Learning builds upon learning. You know, as teachers, we use this method. We teach addition, and then we teach multiplication because that builds on the idea of repetitive addition. And then we can use it, you know, even in word problems. Say we're teaching a word problem about baseball to a child who's very sports-minded. That problem's going to be a lot more understandable because he's familiar with baseball. So familiarity with a subject, it kind of prepares the way for placement into long-term memory. So that's two components. This third one, oh, it is very highly effective. It's rhymes. Let me ask you, do you remember this one? In 1492, Columbus sailed the ocean blue. You remember that one?
Yes.
I think everybody, probably all your listeners, will have that date embedded into their minds forever. So rhymes are kind of like music. You know, they're very easily remembered. There's also remember I before E, except after C. 30 days, half September. I still have to use that one every time. So the brain, what it does, it recognizes the similarities, and the brain likes the repeating sound, and it encodes the words easily. And of course, when you're doing a rhyme, there's sort of a sense of pleasure with the rhyming, and that adds to the brain's ability to remember the information.
Can you give us an example of using rhyme with math?
I sure can. Let's say you're teaching a child about geometric shapes. And let's say they need to remember the definition of the isosceles triangle, which is two angles of equal degrees and two congruent sides. Well, what you can do, you can turn it into a picture, draw an isosceles triangle looking like, a Christmas tree, and then sing this rhyme to the tune of O Christmas Tree. Now, you're going to have to bear with me here because I'm not a singer, but I'm going to try it. It goes, oh, isosceles, two angles have equal degrees. Oh, isosceles, you look just like a Christmas tree.
I like that.
And so your brain says, hey, you know, I can remember that. I'm familiar with Christmas trees and rhyming. You know, that's like a pattern, so that's easy to remember. Plus, it's fun, and I want to do it again. You know, you get started with little songs, and you want to do it over and over. So rhyming is a wonderfully powerful tool.
Now, you mentioned patterns. I know I can remember information if I see a pattern to it. How does that work in math?
Okay, finding, you know, a pattern or just even a rule or an underlying principle in the material, what it does is it enhances the memory process. The brain likes to store information using patterns. And I like to think of a long-term memory as sort of like a filing cabinet. You know, we organize the filing cabinet with all the files. They're categorized. They're in specific places. And that's what the brain does. It finds a pattern or something that it can use to categorize the information it's going to remember. Let me give you an example of that using patterns. And what this is, it's helping kids remember the sequence of events, say, for long division. So when you're doing long division, you have to remember that you divide first, then you multiply, then you subtract, then you bring down, and then you, there's remainder. So the way I have worked this one out is using a pattern along with an association method known as using acronyms. And what an acronym is the first letter of the word you want to remember and then applying a visual object to it that begins with that same letter. I know it sounds confusing, but it isn't really. So let's say we take the first letter of each word and make an association with a family. So we have D, which stands for divide, and we're going to say that the D also stands for dad. So we've got divide and dad, both starting with D. So then the next is M, which is going to stand for mother, and it also is going to stand for multiply. We have the S, which can stand for sister, and it also can stand for subtract. And then the B can be the brother, and it can also mean bring down. And then R, which is the remainder, can be Rover the dog. So now you've got something. You've got a visual picture, and your visual learners are going to remember this. And you're also using some patterns, because this is a pattern the brain says, oh, yeah, I can remember that because I see that pattern. And there's associations and visuals. So it's really important to, you know, provide many opportunities for recognizing patterns to a child at a very early age. I really always stress this when I speak to groups because there seems to be an opening in a child's brain during a very early age. And if we start giving a child a lot of opportunities to see patterns in different toys or games, whatever it is, that neural connection involved in cataloging and storing information, that seems to be opened, and children are better at memorizing if that is stimulated at a very early age. So
And then before we go on, I want to repeat the strategies that you've given us, because I'm taking notes as we go.
Okay.
So you're going to give us 8 strategies.
For
those people who are taking notes, number one is meaningfulness.
Right.
It has to make sense.
That's right.
2 is familiarity.
That's right.
That it's easier to learn new information if you're familiar with the subject.
Mm-hmm.
3 is rhymes, which is a highly effective learning tool.
Right.
4 is patterns, like you have the dad, mother, sister, brother, Rover, and for divide, multiply, subtract, bring down, and remainder.
That's right.
Okay. So what is the 5th strategy?
Okay. The 5th strategy is associations. Rebecca, could you draw the outline of Italy?
I can. I remember it because it looks like a boot.
That's right. How about Denmark?
I haven't a clue. I don't remember what it looks like.
That's because at some early age, some wonderful teacher taught you that Italy looks like a boot, right?
Yes.
And so it's easy to remember. And this is really a good illustration of using association. What association does, it refers to relating what you want to learn to something you already know. And, of course, we did that up there above in that dad, divide, mother, multiply, all of that. That was another form of association. And it's one of the best retention mechanisms that can be employed in learning, second to rhyming. And, you know, it's also a method that's really not used to its maximum potential. I feel, especially in our schools where I taught, we weren't given examples to use using association methods, but it's a powerful way. And, you know, in a few minutes I'm going to show you how to use this association method to memorize multiplication and division facts. It's really effective in that area.
Is it true that pictures are easier to remember than words?
It sure is, especially with visual learners. And, you know, 65% of our children are visual learners, and that's a high percentage. The brain processes information, of course, through images. We see images. We think in pictures. We dream in pictures. And then the brain, what it has to do is process the images back to words for communication. So it's much easier for the brain to retain information that's presented visually. And, you know, our visual learners, they struggle with math because they're not able to picture the concept, and math is very conceptual. So when you're working, you know, on a word problem, you've got to make sure you draw a picture of what is happening in the problem. really be aware if your child is a visual learner. I'm a visual learner, and I struggled with math. It's interesting that I'm doing math now, but I think it's the reason it's working out so well for me to develop these techniques is because I've been there. I was that child who didn't understand it because I was so visual. So
that's funny. Me too.
Really?
Math.
Really?
No, it was hard for me as a kid, and then I retaught to myself as an adult, and I thought, oh, I get it.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Well, I hated word problems until I found out, hey, if I draw a picture, somehow it'll make sense to me. And I want to give your listeners a good example of the power of a picture. Something a lot of children struggle with is liquid measurement and capacity. It's very difficult. You know, how many cups in a pint, or how many quarts in a gallon, or cups in a quart. You know, it's very confusing. So if your listeners are taking notes, well, then have them draw this picture. What I want them to do on a large piece of paper, draw a big capital G, which is going to stand for gallon. Have it take up the whole size of the paper. Okay? Now, inside of the G, I want you to draw two Q's, which of course are going to stand for quart. Two of them up in the top half, and then two more in the bottom half of the G. So now we've got four quarts in the gallon. Then, draw two P's, which stands for pint, inside each Q. Okay, we've got two pints in a quart. And then you draw two C's, which stand for cup, inside each P, or pint. So now you've got a picture in your mind, and you can easily figure out liquid capacity. And this is a wonderful example of how something complex can be made very simple with a picture. And if children are doing a problem, you know, they can even draw out that G and put those in there quickly, and then they say, oh, yeah, now I can see that it takes four cups in a quart. You know, it's just visually there. And, I also want to point out, this picture is in my little free ebook that I'm offering today, too.
And so thank you very much for that. Would you mind repeating that, Donna Lynn? I put it out in our announcement. But you want them to email you, and then you'll tell them where to go to get that email?
Yes. I'll have them. There's a spot on my website where they could download it. Yeah, but they can email me.
Thank you so much for offering that. We really appreciate it. What is your email address again?
It's donnalynn@memoryjoggers.com. And let me spell Donnalynn. It's Donnalyn.
donnalyn@memoryjoggers.com.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And in the subject line, do you want them to put free ebook?
Yes, please do.
Okay. So I like this. I like this picture. I think that would help a lot.
It does. Oh, it's amazing. I tutor a little girl who is a very slow learner, and it's the only way she ever did understand liquid measurement. So it's very effective.
Well, it's just writing it is helpful too.
Mm-hmm.
I know for me, sometimes by the time I've written the directions to a friend's house, if I forget those directions, I'm okay.
Yes. Yes. Because you have. You've written it down. You've done that step.
Well, that's good. Well, speaking, we were talking about books.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the book you wrote, which is called Memory Tips for Math.
Right. And the reason I wrote this book is because I wanted to help parents and teachers to provide memory techniques for kids or any children who are having a hard time remembering, like, math vocabulary. You know, the math vocabulary is terrible. A lot of times the children know what the procedure is, but that math word, it just throws them. So I've tried to take a lot of the math words. It's covered between children ages kindergarten through fifth grade. But an example of doing something like that is, say, the word parallel. Children often forget, well, what is parallel, you know? Well, you just write the word parallel, and then you take the L's and do them like, say, in red, and make them very straight and make them parallel to each other. So just visually, when they see the word parallel, yes, they're going to remember that information. And vertical. Okay, if they can't remember which direction vertical goes, have them write the word vertical going down in a vertical direction. So there's just a lot of little ways that you can do different drawings or writing that really brings that information back to mind. So
what about repetition?
Pardon me?
What about using repetition for memorizing something? I remember repeating information over and over in order to remember it.
Right, right. You know, that is so true. Repetition is important, but every time you repeat a fact aloud, the more likely it will be remembered. But there's also a downside to repetition. If it's boring, it's counterproductive. It's not fun, and the brain rejects it. The brain likes to remember positive, happy things, but if it's boring, it just like it closes down and says, oh, forget that. So repetition, and then along with bodily movement and in a rhyme format, that's a very successful method because it suddenly becomes something fun. And I also want to reiterate about speaking things aloud. I think I mentioned this before. It's very important for the brain to hear the information. So when you ask a child, what is 3 plus 5, make sure he or she doesn't answer 8. You want them to say 3 plus 5 is 8.
I wondered about that. Like when you have the flashcards, have them say the whole thing.
Exactly, exactly.
Ah.
Because the brain hears that and they make a connection between those three numbers.
Unless they're going for speed, I suppose, if you're doing a speed test, then have them give the answers. Otherwise, have them repeat the whole problem.
Exactly. That's exactly right. When they're learning it, when they're really just learning it, you want them to be able to make that connection. So
this is just a great, Donna Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
What about some more ideas on how to memorize addition and subtraction facts?
Well, this is exciting because I'll tell you a little bit about how I developed this system. I knew I wanted to develop something on teaching children how to memorize addition and subtraction facts because teaching third grade, oh my goodness, they still didn't know their facts. They were counting on fingers or using, touch math, whatever. So one day I was out on recess duty and I was watching children and they were playing these clapping games. I don't know if you've ever seen them play or your children have played them. And they were repeating all of these ridiculous rhymes that meant absolutely nothing, something about somebody in Kalamazoo or whatever. And it suddenly dawned on me, why not offer rhymes that are going to teach them something while they're playing and having fun? So that next summer, I began developing some very simple clapping rhymes that use three numbers in the fact family.
Now, you've used that word fact family a couple of times. Could you explain what a fact family is?
Sure. Let's take this one. 6 plus 7 is 13. Okay, the fact family is made up of all the addition and subtraction facts using those three numbers. 6 plus 7 is 13, 7 plus 6 is 13, 13 minus 7 is 6, and 13 minus 6 is 7. So 6, 7, and 13 are a family. And I never taught addition and subtraction separately. I always taught them as a family. It's the best way to teach using a fact family.
I get it. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
What would be a good rhyme then for 6, 7, and 13?
Okay, the one I developed was, it's fun. It goes something like this. And, of course, you got to realize you're going to be clapping at the same time. It goes 6 plus 7 is 13. Playing on a soccer team. 13 minus 7 is 6. I got hit like a ton of bricks. Now, what you have to do, you have to visualize the picture of a child sitting in the middle of a soccer game with a dazed look on his face wearing the number 13 on his jersey. And then the other players are 6 and 7. So, my cards, the way it works, I have a picture on one side and then the rhyme on the other. And then the child claps out the pattern, with a partner. So, it makes it a lot of fun.
What kind of clapping? How does that work?
Okay. Actually, the children make up their own clapping.
So it could be Miss Mary Mac 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 or some kind of clapping pattern like that.
Oh, it could be. What they do, they clap their hands together and then they clap with each other's hands and they develop actually their own little patterns watching them do it. They develop all kinds of complicated patterns and they remember these patterns. And then every time they're doing a clapping, they're saying the rhyme. So it's the same idea, and what they're doing is they're repeating this rhyme over and over because it's fun, and they're forming an association between 6, 7, and 13. So however they see that.
Mm-hmm. Do you do these type of associations, these games, for every fact family or just the ones that are harder?
Well, there's a lot of them, and it would be way too many rhymes to remember. Actually, I have 36 rhymes on my cards, because I don't do ones. I just start 2 plus 2 all the way through 9 plus 9. But that's the nice part about it. They can, they're learning all four facts in one rhyme, so they're making that association with all three numbers. And the way it works, you won't have your child memorize all 36 rhymes even. It's usually the ones he or she's struggling with. You know, they know 2 plus 2 or whatever ones they know. You pull out the ones that they're struggling with and work on those.
Would you say that rhyme one more time, please?
Sure. It goes, 6 plus 7 is 13. Playing on a soccer team, 13 minus 7 is 6. I got hit like a ton of bricks. So that's kind of fun.
So why does this work?
Well, because you're repeating it, first of all, over and over and over, because you're using your whole body. You've got a picture for your visual learners. And then what you're doing, you're clapping. Your kinesthetic learners need to do that clapping. And you are saying it so many times that 6, 7, and 13 just becomes something locked in your brain. So when you see 13 minus 7, you think, oh, yeah, 6, because that's the other number. You are so familiar with that combination. It really works. It's amazing how that does work.
Okay, and like you mentioned, in other words, you don't have to have rhymes for every fact family.
Well, my system covers 2 plus 2 through 9 plus 9.
And then the parent can choose the ones that their child needs.
Yeah, that's 36 rhymes. So usually, you know, you just pick the ones that they're really struggling with. And some people, they start out and they do memorize nearly all of them. So it just depends. But you take it slowly.
What other tools do you use with the memory jogger system?
Well, I also developed an addition and subtraction activity book. It's a 65-page activity book. And so there's a place for the child to color the same picture that's on the card. And then I like to always include some type of writing activity with math. I like the language arts connection with it. So they write the rhyme, and then they write their fact family in this book. And then also in the activity book, there's quizzes and activities to reinforce the facts in the book. And then this system also comes with a CD or a tape of me saying the rhymes and clapping out the cadence. So you get the rhythm. That's important. It becomes almost like a song. And, of course, there's complete instruction booklet for the parent, too.
So how many rhymes do you recommend teaching at one time?
Well, I think it's a big mistake to teach too many addition instruction facts at once. It depends on the child, but usually no more than about 2 to 3 rhymes per week. I would rather have it take longer and have them really know, you know, those facts. I think that's a mistake we often make. We try to teach them way too many things, and then they don't memorize any of them well. So I also like to make sure the child is excited and motivated about learning it, because what I always do, I ask the child if they would like to know, let's say, 5 plus 8 is 13. And it's very important to have that child make a verbal commitment, because it's almost like the brain listens and says, oh, they're saying they want to learn this. So it's like it becomes more receptive to accepting the information. And then, you make it a fun game. You get the excitement going. You show the child a picture card and talk about learning all four facts of the fact family. And then you go turn the card over and show them the rhyme, put on the CD, and get other children involved, too, and get them all doing it with the clapping. So every time they're saying it over and over, they're making that association. And then, of course, you can also, you use your activity book. And then I have a lot of parents who like to have them jump rope to the rhyme or whatever, you know, just as long as it's fun and it's like a game.
That sounds excellent. I know for my own children, they didn't have too much trouble learning their addition and subtraction facts.
Mm-hmm.
But, boy, the multiplication and division facts were hard. I remember my son came back and said, you know, Mom, I think I need to do this again. So do you, I mean, do you have a system that can help us with
vision? Definitely. And of course, this had to be a different system. I couldn't use rhymes because then, you know, they're going to get it all mixed up. So what I developed was an association method. And it's so simple, yet unbelievably effective, and it's fast, and it's fun, and again, multiplication, division, taught at the same time. I never taught it separately. And the way it goes, it's called a peg system. And what a peg system is, every digit has some type of visual association. Like zero is a mouth. One is a stick of gum. Two is a shoe. Three is a tree. Four is a door. Five is a clock. Six are sticks. Seven is a boy named Kevin. Seven, Kevin rhymes. Eight is a snowman named Nate. And nine of the porcupine. So they learn that there's some type of an association that we're going to start using. So let's say we started with teaching the zeros. And, you know, this is hard for children because we've taught them in adding that zero plus four equals four. But now we say, no, in multiplication, zero times four is zero. So they say, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense, especially our visual learners. They say, I can't understand that at all. So we see the zero as a giant mouth that eats every other number. And, of course, all that's left is the zero. So just as simple as that, we have a picture that now is planted in the brain, and they can understand it. And then let's say we go on to the ones. Well, that's easy, too. If you draw a one, you can make it look like a long stick of chewing gum. And one sounds a little like gum, so there's an association there. Now, if you chew that piece of gum and stick it to another number, so let's say you stuck it to the four, which kind of sounds like door, it becomes a part of that four or door, and all that's left is the four. One times four is four. Now, going on to the twos, I'd never had to have stories or methods to teach twos. That seemed to be easy. Children can count by twos, and sometimes I used pairs of shoes to, you know, visually have something to show. And the division reciprocal is pretty easy. And then I'm skipping to the fives because I suggest teaching them as a group using a clock, because you can say, what's five times seven? And you can visualize the clock. And, of course, 35 is the answer. Of course, now, after you've covered those as groups, now all the hard facts are left. And
I love the clock idea for the five.
Yeah, it works because
I've never thought of that before.
Uh-huh, yeah. And the division part is easy, too, because anything that ends in a quotient that ends in five or zero is going to be a clock problem, so they can divide, easily divide.
That's great. Now, okay, you're talking about, like, the hard facts are left.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
right.
What, for example, what can you tell us a story for 7 times 9?
I mean, okay.
That was always a difficult fact to remember.
Okay. And the first thing to remember is that 7 is that little boy named Kevin. He looks like a 7. And 9 is Nina the porcupine. So remember, we've made that association between those objects. And, of course, she, too, is in the shape of a 9. So on a large 8.5 by 11 card is a picture of Kevin, 7, and Nina, 9, trying to climb a tree. And on the back of the card is this little story, and it goes like this. It says, one day, Kevin and Nina went for a walk looking for a tree to climb. They finally found the perfect tree and started to climb it. But as they climbed it, their hands got all sticky. The tree was covered with sap. It was a sticky tree, which rhymes with the product 63. Sticky tree, 63. So now the students made a connection between the three numbers of this fact family. And the problem 7 times 9 is really easy to solve. When you say, what's 7 times 9? They think, 7, Kevin, 9, Nina. Oh, yes, that's when they climbed that sticky tree, 63. So they know division, too. That fast, you can say, what's 63 divided by 9? Sticky tree, Nina. Oh, yeah, that's a story with Kevin 7. So it gives them something to hang on to. It gives them a wonderful way to suddenly know that product. They're not going to get it mixed up. They're not trying to count I've had children try to count how many, you know, seven nines. It's tough. So it's really a beautiful way to teach with using these stories. And of course, all the stories are structured this way. Seven's going to always be Kevin, and he's involved with some other symbol. You know, if it's seven times four, it's going to be the door, whatever. There's a little story for each one. And the product will always be either a sound-alike word or some familiar word that, you know, is a reminder of the answer. So this consistency, the brain responds to that. It can certainly pattern this and catalog these stories and remember them, because there is a pattern and there is a consistency. And, of course, the visual, you know, our visual learner, oh, my goodness, they remember it much easier because they can see a picture. And the auditory learner loves telling the story over and over. And then our kinesthetic learner, they can respond with whole body movement by acting out the story. I used to have my kids in my classroom act out the stories, and oh my goodness, they loved it. I'd pin a number on them, like I'd pin the nine and the seven on different children, and they'd act out trying to climb this sticky tree. And kinesthetic learner, they really respond to that. But I also liked on this one too, I like to follow up with, remember I told you, in a language arts activity book. What I've done here is I've made this 66-page book, and the picture from the card, it's all ready to be colored, and then there are lines where the child can actually retell the story by writing. And this way, you know, you're bringing that language arts connection to math, and it really ties it all in. It makes it more meaningful. Like you said before, if you write down how to get someplace, you've actually written it down, you're going to remember it. So, and also in the book, there's lots of, you know, assessment tests and activities that will tell the parent exactly how they're doing.
How long should it take to memorize all the facts?
Well, you know, I suggest you, again, do it slowly. When I was teaching my class, I would introduce only two stories a day, and then I'd review in between. And in fact, when I'd review, I'd have the children in the classroom, I'd have them retell the story. So again, they got an opportunity to say it again. And then, actually, when I was teaching in public school, in 2 months, my students knew all their facts from 0 through 9 for multiplication and division. And, you know, their test scores were just amazing. And of course, that's having a classroom of 20 children with a lot of different learning problems too. So, the other day, I'll just read this little letter that I got from a homeschool mom in Texas, and she wrote, "I have an 11-year-old who was really struggling with memorizing multiplication tables. He did this program, and within a week or so, learned them all. He is so proud that he knows his multiplication division facts and can now advance much faster in Miss Math. Thank you so much from homeschool mom and son. Your product is great." So here we have an example. My goodness, she really, this little boy picked it up fast, and within a week they learned them all. But I really recommend to do it a little slower than that. I think it's, most children need to have a little review time in between. So that's what I recommend.
What about memorizing the 10s, 11s, and 12s? In other words, the 10s and 11s are easy, but sometimes the 12s can be challenging.
Right. And when I first developed the system, I only did it 0 through 9 because that's what's required in the schools. And then, you know, I started realizing children need, they really need to know what the 12s are. We use this so much in measurement and so many things. It's really important, you know, to know the 12s. So I developed a new little character, and he's called Telf the Elf. And he, again, interacts with all the other characters and symbols in the story. So it's using the same ones I used in 0 through 9, but just added Telf the Elf. And when I developed the system, I also showed how to do the 10s and 11s, too. And I've also included an activity book with the 10s, 11s, and 12s, too. So I'll show you just one of them. I'll give you an example of it. This one is for 12 times 9. And, you know, a lot of adults don't even remember what 12 times 9 is. I don't think I did either until I developed the little story. But this is, it kind of turned into a little rhyme, but it's kind of cute, and you can kind of visualize it because, of course, there's a picture with it. And it goes like this. So remember, 12 is tell, 9 is nine of the porcupine. And it says, Nina, Nina, never late, love to sing and roller skate, even across the Golden Gate. Telf was lazy and always late, couldn't skate at any rate. Nina and Telf made a date to meet at the bridge at 1:08. Guess you know who had to wait. Telf never made it by 1:08. Nina couldn't tolerate Telf's bad habit of being late. So now, all your listening audience is going to remember that 12 times 9 is 1:08, right?
I like it. It's cute. So does this system work with all children, even those with learning disabilities?
Well, I like to even think of it as more learning challenges, and yes, it definitely does work. It works incredibly well. I speak to special ed teachers nationwide, and they've given me so much positive feedback on their success with ADHD children, dyslexic children, and, you know, just slower learning students using these memory jogger systems. So the reason it works is because it provides the tools these children need to memorize, and at last they can finally feel some success with math. In fact, when I was teaching, I taught a third grade little dyslexic girl who, she absolutely cried every time we had math. And one day I introduced the stories to her for multiplication and division, and oh my goodness, you couldn't believe it. You could see the look on her face. She suddenly had a lifeline. You know, she could remember the pictures and the stories as easy as anything. And it was the very first time she had ever received 100% on a math test. And I thought she was going to pop. She was so happy. It completely changed her outlook about math. And sometimes, you know, we just need to do this. We need to help children feel good about themselves and that, yes, they can do it. Because they're hard on themselves when they haven't had any successes in math.
Donna Lynn, I'm looking at the clock. Mm-hmm. I sure would love to open up the call for 10 minutes, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Are you ready to take some questions?
Sure.
So, callers, if you would, please mute your phone by pressing *6 or by using the mute button on your telephone. I'm going to open up and we'll take the first question, and then I'll go back into this nice, quiet conference mode so that you can hear the answer. Here we go. First question for Donna Lynn Yates, talking about memory joggers for math.
My first request, if I could, this is Mary in Florida, would be to go over that the G. I wasn't ready to write that G page down.
And she has the G instructions for you on her ebook.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yes. So she said if you write, tell your email again, Donna Lynn.
Donna Lynn at memoryjoggers.com.
DonnaLynn at memoryjoggers.com. Mm-hmm. And then she'll tell you where to go to get that free ebook.
Great. Thanks.
Great. Next question for Donna Lynn.
Hi, my name is Kriana from Philadelphia. I wanted to go over the 8 components. I left off that association. I was wondering what the other 3 were.
Oh, thank you very much, because I forgot to repeat those.
Okay, let's see.
Okay, so let's see. So, Jonathan, we took them through 5.
Yes, we have association was 5. 6 was visualization. 7 is repetition.
And then is there an 8th?
Well, 8th is just fun. It's got to be fun.
Make it fun.
Uh-huh.
That's great. Thank you. Good question. Thank you for catching us. Can you, next question, please. Let's see. Oh, there we go. Now we're live again.
Okay.
Do you have another question for Donna Lynn? Any special math challenges you're having with your children?
I have a question.
Yes, please.
What about the speed test that they have? How important is that?
The speed test?
Yes, they have speed tests after a certain time. How important really is that? And if it puts stress on a child, what do you do? I mean, I usually stopped doing it, and
mm-hmm.
it was a problem because I felt that eventually they were going to learn it.
That's right. I totally agree with you. Even in school, I know they push so much that we do speed tests, and I could see what it was doing to a lot of children. They would just, they were just feeling so awful if they didn't pass it, and I don't really feel that it's necessary. You know, they're going to learn this. They're going to learn it very quickly, and it's much better for them to feel good about themselves that they know it. And in life, it's going to come faster and faster naturally as they use it more. It's just an automatic thing. I'm not for speed tests.
Now, Donna Lynn, mm-hmm. in the United States, on the international math scores, the United mm-hmm. States is next to last place.
I know.
You know,
yep.
we start out well in elementary school, and then we go lower. I know in Japan, they do a lot of these speed tests because they want to ensure that the child just knows these facts second nature, that they don't mm-hmm. have to think about them at all, and that they can then go on to do more advanced mathematics.
That's true. That is so true. And it will come. It will come faster. And, you know, if your child responds to it and does well with it, yeah, keep increasing it. But I wouldn't put too much pressure on them because I have seen children that have just kind of given up.
Plus, we're lucky with homeschooling, too. It doesn't have to be over faster than the Joneses.
Oh, right.
You know, it's a game where, that's okay, right. you finish this sheet in this amount of time, now you go on and do the next one.
That's right.
You know,
that's
which can,
such
can make
a much
fun.
Better way.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're right. If it's a competition and somebody's always faster than you, that's no fun.
It isn't any fun. It's very bad.
Or where you feel like you're not passing out of it. If it's self-paced and, you know, you're going along at a certain level, then I think that'd be a lot more fun.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Well, thank you. These are excellent questions.
Yes.
Next question, please. We have about 2 minutes left with Donna Lynn.
I guess I'm thinking that my question was answered. I have an almost 12-year-old, and he struggled with math. And then, so my question was also, how quickly, you know, can they go through this? I guess at their own pace.
Mm-hmm. Right, pretty much so. But you'll be surprised with the stories. They're going to memorize them very, very quickly. You'll be very surprised. You know, I've even had excellent results with children with autism and even Down syndrome children. So it's really amazing how well this system works.
Donna Lynn, I know you have lots of different products that I think our listeners would like to learn about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to put you on the spot. Would you mind telling us the name and the brief description of the products that you have?
Sure. I have the addition and subtraction learning system. And what that includes, there's a basic system which includes all the 36 cards and a parent-teacher guide and then the activity book and the CD, and then the deluxe edition also includes my memory tips for math book. And then I have the multiplication and division learning system, which includes the cards and parent-teacher guide and the activity book, and that's the basic system. And then the deluxe system, we add the memory tips for math book. And then the memory tips for math book is also available just by itself, too, so you can purchase it that way, too.
Now, your website is memoryjoggers.com.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
memoryjoggers.com.
Correct. That's
and they can
correct.
Get your free ebook by
uh-huh.
emailing Donna Lynn, DonnaLynn, at
memoryjoggers. No, just one N.
One N. Oh, yes, thank you. One N at memoryjoggers.com.
Yeah, and I talking to you, I realize I forgot to tell you that the multiplication division also includes the 10s, 11s, and 12s. I forgot to tell you that. So that's in both the basic and the deluxe. It includes that, too.
No, I think it's really a great idea because if we can do this, the stories first, then when we do, if we play with the speed drills,
sure,
they'll be set up for success.
Exactly. That's
I know
exactly
when you said the 9 times 12, I had to take it down to 9 times 11, and then I had to add 9.
That's right. A lot of people will do that. Sure. Mm-hmm. Sure, and you can.
I like your way, though, because you're right. It'll be faster, I think.
I think so, too. Yeah, because
and
that would
then
be
if we,
your mind.
If the children do know the facts just in the second nature, it's just one less thing they have to worry about.
That's right. That's right. And I found it was so wonderful because they weren't getting it mixed up. Is 7 times 9 63, or was that 64, you know? Or 56, you know, what was that?
It's awfully hard to think about geometry theorems or advanced algebra if you're struggling through basic
math. Exactly. That's exactly the reason I went into this.
Well, that's great.
I think that's
so we've been speaking with Donna Lynn Yates, with Memory Joggers. Today is day one in our homeschool.com's winter homeschooling teleconference. Tomorrow we have fabulous interviews for you again. So Tuesday, January 17th, our first interview, 11 o'clock Pacific time, and that is 12 Mountain, 1 Central, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Our first interview is with Christopher Paolini. Christopher Paolini was a homeschooled teen who is the author of Aragon. His second book, Eldest, just came out last summer. And Aragon is being made into a major motion picture. Christopher is one of those guys. We interviewed him 2 years ago, and I kept thinking to myself, boy, it just couldn't happen to a nicer guy. And I read his newsletter. He puts out a personal newsletter, and you can just tell that he's really enjoying his success, and he's such a terrific role model for our children. So if you can, I sure would invite you to have your teens on the call. I know that they'll really be grateful for a chance to connect with Christopher personally. Christopher just finished his tour, his book tour in the United States and of Europe. So he's a bit tired. We're not going to be able to have the call open as long as we normally would, but at least we can do 10 minutes. So if you want to email your questions to me, to Rebecca@homeschool.com, I'll make sure that I ask the question for you and make sure we get your question answered. And then coming up at 12 o'clock, I'm very honored to have Dr. Stephen Covey. Once again, just the nicest guy on the planet. He is the author of The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, and he's also written The 7 Habits of Highly Effective Families. And he's just such a nice, giving, caring gentleman. He has invited us to leave the line open the entire 60 minutes. He really just wants to connect with you and answer your questions and chat back and forth. So if we don't have too much noise on the line, I thought we'd give that a try. It really is a wonderful opportunity to connect with these best-selling authors. Coming up, our third interview for tomorrow, we're going to be exploring the idea of Thomas Jefferson education. You've probably heard about this. This is another popular style of homeschooling. And we're going to be speaking with Oliver DeMille. He's the author of the book, Thomas Jefferson Education, and he's also the president of George Wythe College. So I know you will enjoy all of those interviews. Feel free to pass along the dial-in number and the passcode. The more, the merrier. Very happy to have as many people on the calls as possible. I've arranged for extra lines, so we should be in good shape. If you are a homeschool.com product tester, thank you very much for reviewing our guests and letting us know what you think. I'll be sure to pass along your positive comments on to our guests. For more information about the teleconference, it's available at the top of homeschool.com. You'll be able to click on the left for the complete schedule. The center button is where you can order the recordings, and we'll try to get those out as quickly as possible. It's $8 per CD, and it usually takes about 2 weeks by the time we get the masters and get the recordings out. And then the third button is for the product testers to go in and give us your advice and your feedback. So I'm going to open up the line now so we can say goodbye and thank you to Donna Lynn Yates with Memory Joggers. If you have any additional questions for me, for Rebecca, I'm your host for this teleconference, please ask that, and then we'll take a break for today and come back at 11 o'clock tomorrow morning. So here we go. Would you join me in thanking Donna Lynn for her time today?
Thank you, Donna Lynn.
Yes, thank you
very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It was an honor to be on your program. I loved it. Thanks so much.
You sure gave us some great information.
I hope so. Good.
Thank you very much. I know I was taking pages of notes while we talked.
Good.
Well, Rebecca, nice. Can you give us your email address?
Yes, it's Rebecca@homeschool.com. Rebecca@homeschool.com.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, everyone, for being on the call.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Thank you, Donna Lynn. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk with you tomorrow then, everyone. See you
bye-bye.
On Tuesday. Bye-bye. We hope you have enjoyed this special presentation from homeschool.com. For a copy of this program or any homeschool.com program, visit our website at www.homeschool.com. At homeschool.com, you'll find the information, resources, and support you need to make your homeschooling better than ever.